It is that time again. Welcome into the Believe in Titans podcast for the first full week in March. One deadline has passed. Another key date coming up in a week or so. So the off season is picking up steam, and we are here to look at that and some other things with our usual panel. Former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing good this evening. How you doing, David?
Doing great. John Glennon, how are you, sir?
I'm well. Hope you guys are.
Good to hear it. And I am David Beauclair. And a reminder that this is the Believe in Titans podcast, which is brought to you by Bet Online. And Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from pro and college basketball to UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any game or sport imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to the website today to use your mobile device to join. And excuse me, let's do that again. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, it's where the game starts. All right, one of the more interesting developments of the last few days, gentlemen, is that the Titans are shopping Derrick Henry, or they're not shopping Derrick Henry, depending on which report you saw and or want to believe. So, Denard Walker, I'll start with you. Is it possible to imagine the Tennessee Titans in 2023 without Derrick Henry?
I can't imagine it. It wouldn't look right. And who you got to bring in? You know, that's the interesting question. I don't see it. This is a move that I don't see Rand Carthon making, because, man, if it goes wrong, he might be out of Nashville within the first 6 months.
it would be kind of an all or nothing proposition, yeah. I guess, you know, because let's face it. He looked like a guy whose best days are behind him, but is still pretty darn good considering he finished second in the league in rushing this year, having missed a game. You know, that there he's coming up on that magical age, if you will, for running backs at 30. And you know, it's when you need to start considering these things with running backs. But yeah, we've said it before. If anybody, there is that sense that if anybody can buck the trends for running back longevity and productivity, it's Derrick Henry. So John, I mean, what did you make of the conflicting reports there? How do you sort through it?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say there's a little bit of both probably going on. You know, I don't know for a fact, but judging from what both reports were, I think it's probably fair to think that the Titans were at least gauging interest on a potential Derrick Henry trade, gauging what value he might have on the trade market, which I think is different from actively and aggressively shopping a player, you know, looking for a trade. So, you know, we're really looking to move on. But to me, just the fact that you are kind of testing the waters, if that was the case, is something new. You know, that is a development that we have not yet seen with Derrick Henry. And, you know, obviously with anything, the pros and cons, you know, Derrick Henry is the guy who last year ran for, you know, over 1,500 yards and 13 touchdowns again, and, you know, had the second highest, you know, PFF grade of his career last year, playing behind a crappy offensive line. So those, you know, you look at that and you say, how can they possibly let him go? On the other hand, numbers are, you know, declining in some areas over the last couple of years, you know, everything from the basics, you know, yards per carry, 4.3 and 4.4 the last couple of years, as opposed to like around 5 for his, you know, the previous three seasons. The longer runs, you know, we're not quite seeing quite as many, not as many broken tackles, that kind of thing. He's getting closer to 30, as you mentioned. So you wonder, you know, and you raise the question, of that old kind of Bill Belichick philosophy of, you know, you want to move away from a player, move on from a player. You'd rather do it a year early as opposed to a year late. Reason being, you know, you can still get some good value for Derrick Henry at this point. Whereas maybe, you know, if he the decline continues this year, and granted, it is not by any means a big decline. But if it did continue this year and you're again trying in this position next year, value is probably less that you might get in a trade.
Well, and, you know, Denard makes an excellent point in that Rand Carthen hasn't been on the job long, right? So there's probably right. no sacred cows on this roster with him. Like, if you're John Robinson and Derrick Henry, you've watched Derrick, you drafted Derrick Henry, and you've watched him do the things he has done for this franchise and win you football games almost single-handedly, you know, you feel a certain allegiance and a certain, you know, whatever it is, you need to honor this guy and what have you. And you know, Rand Carthen doesn't have that connection with him. So if, you know, if people do call with trade offers, I'm sure he is willing to discuss. But the Titans are they're in a good situation with him too. If he suddenly falls off the cliff this year and he's terrible, you know, there's only 1 year left on his contract, and the odds of that happening, let's face it, are pretty darn slim. I mean, even if, like you point out, John, if he continues to decline, it's not a steep decline at this point. Oh my gosh, what if he only has 1,200 yards and Hassan Haskins has to carry 50 more times this year than he did last year, whatever, you know, like that's hardly the worst thing. And then he plays out this contract, everybody sees the writing on the wall, and you say it's time to move on. But I agree. You know, I asked Denard, it would be incredibly strange at this point to see Derrick Henry in another uniform. I mean, it would be as hard as seeing Eddie George in a Dallas Cowboys uniform, or I can't even think of another example, except maybe Denard Walker in a Minnesota Vikings uniform.
Easy, you shouldn't have mentioned Minnesota of all places. But
it's true, but you know, to that point, David, we have over the years, you know, over the decades, we have seen, you know, plenty of big name players, you know, playing in different uniforms at the end of their career. You know, I mean, did we ever see Randy Moss playing in a Titans uniform, for instance? That looked a little unusual. And that's just one of many. We've certainly seen, you know, many quarterbacks over the years playing in some unusual uniforms at the end of their career. But, yeah, I wanted to add also in reference to what Denard said at the beginning, too. Yeah, big, big, I guess, ballsy move for Rand Carthen if he is going to go through with this, because not only is that, yeah, one of your first moves on the job, you know, is to move away a legend, you know, a likely Hall of Famer. But you have to also keep in mind that the return isn't as big, I don't think, as people might believe, because, you know, teams would be looking for what Derrick Henry could bring to them now and in the future, as opposed to everything that Derrick Henry had brought to the Titans to this point, you know. So it's not going to be like one of those massive, hey, we're getting two firsts and two thirds, you know, and I think a lot of people would be surprised by that, and there would be some backlash to that. So if Rand Carthen wants to make a move like that, he better buckle up.
Yeah, if Tom Brady can leave New England, you know, anything I think is possible in this league. And I think it's important to note, you make a great point, John, in that, you know, Derrick Henry's value to the Titans is probably greater, or at least perceived value is greater than it would be for any other franchise. And there's this too, you know, people probably see Derrick Henry's weekly press conferences and whatnot, and they are incredibly boring. And he, you know, he does everything he can to say as little as possible, which belies the kind of personality he has and what he adds to this locker room. He is a very important part of this team and the overall attitude of the room, and an underappreciated leader in terms of what he does. And Denard, I want to ask you, like, those kinds of elements, if you were to take a guy like that out of this locker room, you know, knowing how central a figure he is, how hard would that be for the 52 guys who are left behind in that case, you think?
That would be very hard, because you're talking about the face of your franchise. This is not just any player. This is the king. I mean, David, listen, the way that you're judged in this league is how productive you are. You're talking about the former second rounder out of Alabama, the Heisman Trophy winner. Four times in seven seasons, he's rushed for over 1,000 yards. And let's not forget, he has eclipsed the 2,000-yard mark. And in 2021, when he went down with that foot injury, that's not his fault. That can happen to anybody. He was on getting ready to have a second consecutive 2,000-yard season. I mean, he was on fire, and he was on pace for another big season until that injury. And then he comes back in the playoff game against Cincinnati. You know, think about that. You can't coach that, David. That's hard. That's resilient. How many players, you know, they would have milked it and said, listen, I'm not going to come back and risk my career, you know, for one playoff game. Really? I got, you know, three, four, five more years to think about, but not the king. He came back anyways. You can't coach that. That's the DNA of Tennessee. That's Derrick Henry. Look at the way that he won, the passion. We saw that last year. We talked about the fumbles. You know, we've never seen that in his career before. A lot of that was second effort fumbles. You can't coach that. That's just a guy going out there trying to do a little bit more. You not only lose a leader, you lose the pulse of your team. And let's not forget, David, it's the old subtraction from addition rule. So let's say if Rand Carthon made the move to go ahead and trade Derek, who do you replace him with? Yeah. Do you think Hassan Haskins is right now, he's ready to take on that role? Or think about the top free agents out there right now. Would you go after David Montgomery? He's had a history of injuries. He's only 25, because we know in this league they're always looking to get younger. You're going to go with Devin Singletary out of Buffalo? I know he has some productive years, but I don't think he's the answer. What about Miles Sanders, you know, with Philly? I know he's a great athlete. He's got great abilities, but again, he's not a every down back. Derek is a every down back. He's a four down back. How many guys in this league that you can say at the running back position other than Saquon is a four down back?
Yeah, it's a great question. I threw Saquon Barkley out there last week as a potential free agent target for the Titans, and what that would mean for Derrick Henry. We had a good laugh about that at the end of the podcast. But you know, these kinds of discussions are going to get serious now. We're a week away from the quote unquote legal tampering period, which is you know the free agent negotiating period, and then the signing period starts a couple days after that. And interestingly enough, one of the guys you brought up, Denard, Orlando Brown, it looks like, is going to be a free agent, and a guy, a Titan who we know will be in another uniform, or I guess possibly it seems like he wants to be in another uniform now, is Taylor Lewan. And Lewan is batting eyes, you know, quite figuratively on social media at the Chiefs at this point. So, you know, we all know that the offensive line issues this past year is, you know, should Orlando Brown be the number one guy on that free agent wish list for the Titans at this point? Denard.
Oh, well, yeah, either that or because, well, you know, I actually did pretty much a whole podcast on Orlando Brown Jr., baby Zeus, 6'8", 300 plus pounds. But I think he would be a huge asset. You're talking about one of the most dynamic left tackles in the league today, not to mention he's coming off of a Super Bowl. David, you know what they say is that teams go out looking for winners. Man, when you win a Super Bowl or you've been to the playoffs, guess what? It opens up so many opportunities for your organization, because that's what organizations want. They want to bring over that winning, I call it that, the winning ways. And Orlando Brown would be a huge asset. We don't know the situation with Nate Davis. You know, Ben Jones is considering retirement. And so when you're talking about, you have a young right tackle in Nicholas Petit-Frere. Let's say if Ben Jones comes back for one more year, you add the baby Zeus at left tackle. Then let's say you sign Nate Davis. And, man, you're talking about a top offensive line. You got a 29-year-old running back. You have a 35-year-old quarterback. You need someone at that left tackle position to protect Ron. Let's not forget, Kansas City has the MVP in the National Football League and Patrick Mahomes. Who protected his blind side?
Orlando Brown
Jr. Orlando Brown Jr. There you go.
And, I guess the question, John Glennon, is can the Titans afford Orlando Brown Jr. or somebody like him? You know, can they be in the market for the best of the best free agents this year?
Yeah, that is kind of the key dynamic there. I think, as Denard referenced, I think if you're looking for a free agent left tackle, I mean, he is head and shoulders above the rest of the group. You know, that you look further, there are some good tackles on the market, but most of them are, you know, primarily right tackles. One other left tackle that got released recently, Donovan Smith been a longtime starter for Tampa Bay. He's not coming off a particularly good year. Gave up a lot of pressures, hurries, and so forth. So I don't think he's necessarily, you know, the answer at left tackle. But one question I would like to get answered as well is that, is there, and you know, this has been asked of Mike Vrabel and previously John Robinson also, but is there any chance that you move Nicholas Petit-Frere from right to left? He has played plenty of left in college. Is there any thought process that they might do that? Is he good enough to be a good left tackle? If so, maybe you go ahead and do that this year, and then you look at free agency as a right tackle situation. And I think there are more right tackles out there. You know, Caleb McGarry was released by Atlanta. He's coming off a really good year. And of course, the system in Atlanta, you know, obviously has a lot of ties and similarities to the Titans as well. Mike McGlinchey of San Francisco is another good one as well. And there are probably a couple other ones that I'm missing as well as far as right tackles. So that to me is one strategy that would kind of cut down the cost, as if you're going after a free agent left tackle with a guy like Orlando Brown's experience and accolades over the years, you're gonna pay top dollar. And if you pay top dollar there, do you have enough money left to address, you know, if you want a wide receiver, if you want, you know, other positions to fill on the offensive line? So you gotta answer that question, I think, as well. And also the question of, you know, there are going to be some good potential left tackles coming up here in the draft as well. And I think the Titans, even if they stay at 11, should be at a spot where they could get a pretty good left tackle. So maybe you go that route for your primary left tackle, and you've got a couple of bookends in a stud first rounder, you know, paired with Nicholas Petit-Frere over on the right side.
Are we in agreement though, that Dylan Radunz is not going to be a starting tackle in this league? I kind of feel that way. I almost feel like Radunz might be the answer at left guard. Aaron Brewer was game, but certainly got pushed around at times. Was not a guy who dominated or even held up sort of week in and week out. I think you need a bigger body, a little bit of a different type in there, and maybe it's time to just say Dylan Radunz is now the left guard, and if he can't make it there, then we're going to be done with him and worry about your tackle situation, like you say, John. Pick a side for Petit-Frere and then fill in the other one and go from there. Anybody have any arguments with that plan, or is there or should they go get somebody at left guard as well, Denard, do you think?
That was interesting because you took the – I was just about to say how disappointing I was in you and John, because I think all of us forgot that wasn't Dylan Radunz your second-round pick in 2021, and wasn't he an All-American at North Dakota State at the left tackle position? And we talked about his struggles, David, but you alluded to the fact that when there was a battle between him and Nicholas. So now that they moved Nicholas Petit-Frere to the right tackle position, you said that it might be good for Dylan because he wins the consolation prize at left tackle. He go back to his natural position. So, I mean, this can be huge, not to mention he's going into his third year. This is a pivotal year for Dylan Raisin because this organization needs to see, is he worth signing down the line, or do we go ahead and cut ties with this guy if he can't make it at that left tackle position? I know what they used to do that to us back in the year. They give you, 4 years, but you had about 3 years to prove yourself. If not, then what happens is you're gone. So I would love to see where they can plug in Dylan Raitens, and I hope that he can step up. You have Nicholas Petit-Frere at the right tackle position because you have so many needs right now. And you're talking about when you go out and you're going to get a left tackle, you know you're going to have to pay someone like Orlando Brown Jr. a lot of money. And not to mention, you got the big man, Jeffrey Simmons, making a lot of noise on social media.
Yeah. So John, we'll say this too. There's a new offensive line coach, a new offensive coordinator. How much do you think a clean slate with some of those coaches too helps a guy like Raidens and gives him an opportunity to sort of reboot, if you will?
Yeah, I think it'll certainly help. I mean, but I guess first off, you know, we have to remember about Dylan Raidens is that he tore an ACL, you know, fairly late in the season as well. So there's always that question of, you know, when exactly is he going to be ready? You know, obviously he's probably going to miss a good chunk of the offseason, which is not going to help his cause. So I think it's, you know, pretty risky, you know, based on what we have seen over 2 years. You throw the ACL injury in there to boot. I think it'd be pretty risky to kind of pencil him in at any starting position right now. He just hasn't shown enough, and I know he hasn't gotten a lot of opportunities, but the reason for that is, you know, because they haven't felt that he's done well enough, obviously, in practice and preseason. But I would be hesitant to put much, put a high priority on him being a significant player next year. I think he's really going to have to prove himself, especially coming back from the ACL. You know, we've seen obviously with Taylor Lewan that it can take a while. It's not automatic that in that first year back that everything goes right back to you know, as healthy as you were before.
On the flip side of that, though, Denard just mentioned the man, Jeffrey Simmons, who has shown that you can come back from a knee injury pretty quickly and be productive these days. But as Denard referenced, Jeffrey Simmons has created some drama and some tension for Tennessee Titans fans here in the last few days by scrubbing all mentions of the team from his social media accounts, which sounds to me like a guy who got a report from his agent that negotiations on a long-term contract are not going the way he wants. He's not satisfied with things. He's trying to send a message that way. Denard, is that a you didn't have to go through these things when you were a player, but do you think that catches the attention of franchise officials, or is that just sort of standard operating procedure these days?
Well, it worked for AJ last year. It worked well because he's a rich man. So if you have to go to social media to plead your case, hey, it's not a bad thing to do.
Yeah, I guess not.
No.
You know, Debo Samuel, I think, did the same thing with the 49ers last year,
did.
Though.
And, sure
and Kyler Murray ended up staying there.
Yeah. And you know what's weird, David, is, you know, Jeffrey and his agent right now, they're eyeing one thing, and that's that Aaron Donald contract, that 3-year contract extension that's going to pay AD $95 million. So, you know, the big man is looking at Aaron Donald, and you know that's what the agents do when they go in a room to talk business and to put together a new contract. They look at who's right now the top dog at that position. And we know that Aaron Donald is the pinnacle, but we know that Jeffrey Simmons, when he went head-to-head against AD, he really showed out, and he showed why he deserves that type of money. And not to mention, when you look at Jeffrey Simmons, I'm not going to get into the 54 tackles and the 7.5 sacks. Only thing you have to do to know that this young man deserves that type of money is what is one of the most, I think something very coveted to most players is that when you're voted, you talk about the top 100 players in 2022, he finished 54th. That's pretty great. And considering the fact in 2021, he finished 78. So that tells you this young man, I mean, he's on his way to stardom. So again, it's all about keeping him happy. I would hate to see him get out of Nashville. I don't want to see this be a situation like what's going on in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. But again, you know, David, in this league, it's all about compensation.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal for most players. You know, Super Bowl and money are 1 and 1A, I think, for most people, depending, guys will have differences as to which is which there. But, John, I'll ask you the same question. How concerned should fans be? And at what point of the offseason does no contract extension start to really become an issue here? I mean, he is on the franchise tag, right? He's on the fifth year option. So he's under contract for this season. I mean, there's not an issue there. So at what point though, does this become a real problem, you think?
I think, this kind of thing is, as you referenced before, you know, we saw this kind of behavior with A.J. Brown. We saw it with Debo Samuel. And before that, I think Arizona's, Kyler Murray was kind of the first one to sort of get the ball rolling with this whole scrub the social media account of connections to the team. And what it does, it raises the fact that there is discontent in their camp, that they're not happy. You know, this was something that players couldn't do, before social media was so huge. This is an option now to let the world know, hey, I'm not happy with this team. Is it of itself something that got these players new, bigger contracts? But I think it's a step. I do think, and especially when you look at the Titans and what happened just 1 year ago when A.J. Brown, this was the beginning of the end of A.J. Brown, was the whole social media account. And then it led to this and it led to this and it led to that. And eventually A.J. Brown was a rich man, but he wasn't in a Titans uniform anymore. So Titans fans, there's plenty of Titans fans out there thinking, oh, no, here we go again. This is exactly the same sort of thing. And that creates a little bit of discontent, a little bit of stress level, I suspect, for front office. Are they going to dash out with an immediate huge contract? No. But it's discontent nonetheless. It's a little agitation. It's something that the player can do. So, the longer it goes and the longer Jeffrey Simmons, who obviously is another franchise cornerstone that they really have to have back, then I think the pressure increases on the front office. And again, part of the reason for that is because of what happened last year. You know, we're all still talking about A.J. Brown and what a terrible move it wound up being that he left, or, that he was ended up being traded instead of getting a new contract. So these are the first steps, to show, hey, I'm angry. I want something to happen. I want more of a sense of urgency. And what's happening now? We're talking about this. Writers are writing about this. Fans are talking about this. So and from that, in that respect, the ball, the wheel is rolling for Jeffrey Simmons.
And it's become become another popular. Well, no, I'm confusing the franchise tag and the fifth year option again. Jeffrey Simmons has no, I mean, there's no point in him holding out in terms of financial benefit or whatnot. If he were to not show up in training camp, he sort of was persona non grata there for a little while last offseason. If he were to not show up in training camp, he's not gaining anything in terms of security that way. So there's no benefit there. I mean, all he's looking for at this point is security beyond the 2023 season. And to Denard's point, something in the neighborhood of Aaron Donald's contract. I mean, he is not a 2 or 3-time defensive player of the year at this point, but in pretty much every other performance metric, and I would assume if you would talk to interior offensive linemen across the league, they would tell you there's probably not a big difference between an Aaron Donald and a Jeffrey Simmons. But you know, and let's be clear about this: Titans are good on the defensive line. That is one area that they don't have personnel shortages. But you're just not going to find guys like Jeffrey Simmons. To go back to the AJ thing, there's wide receivers all over this league in this game right now. Titans traded AJ Brown, had nothing resembling him last year. It'd be way harder to try and replicate a Jeffrey Simmons than it would even an AJ Brown. So this is one that I think we all agree it's going to get done. It's just, you know, Jeffrey Simmons is an emotional guy, and I think, you know, his emotions are showing at this point. But, you know, Denard, you've talked about it. If you're Roger McCreary, if you're Kevin Byard, if you're Amani Hooker, you know, those guys, as much as anybody right now, are saying to themselves, oh God, just get this deal done, right? Let's keep this guy around forever, because he's a secondary's best friend, isn't he?
Those defensive linemen, they are your best friend. And without them, you know what? I tell you, believe me, I know. The first 2 years, you're talking about coverage, and you have to stay in coverage a lot longer. As opposed to when we got Javon Kearse, it was like night and day, David. You will miss Jeffrey Simmons if he somehow that some other team scoops him up. They don't want to let him out of there. But yeah, you need players like that. You showed me a great defensive line. You can have an average secondary. You can still win.
You know, you mentioned Lamar Jackson a minute ago, and interestingly, the Ravens put the non-exclusive franchise tag on him, which amounts to a $32.41 million deal for this year. But it gives the quarterback, the former NFL MVP, the opportunity to talk to other teams. And if he gets an offer, the Ravens will have the right to match it. That's probably not a deal that affects the Titans directly, but John, you know, I'll ask you, how interesting is this in terms of just the whole business, the way business is going to be conducted over the next couple of weeks here in the NFL, and what might happen on, you know, to a number of teams in terms of their budgeting here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, from a business standpoint, I think one of the first questions that's going to be answered here, you know, from all accounts, and we're obviously not involved in the negotiations and have firsthand knowledge ourselves, but from all accounts, it sounds as if Lamar Jackson is seeking a deal similar to the one Deshaun Watson got with the Cleveland Browns, you know, a guaranteed 5-year, $230 million deal. So I think that's the first kind of litmus test here is, you know, Lamar Jackson, who is probably what, the top five NFL quarterbacks, certainly a top 10, no doubt about that, maybe top five. Is he good enough, you know, to command that kind of a quarterback contract? Is anybody willing to pay that same kind of money that the Cleveland Browns paid Deshaun Watson? I think it's going to happen. I don't think any team, at least in the near future, is going to line up and say, yep, that's the new precedent. We're going to give out 5-year, $230 million fully guaranteed contracts. I just don't see it happen. So if you're the Ravens and you're the, you know, your only two options really seemingly are, you know, tag him or give him the Deshaun Watson type contract, you know, I don't blame them. You know, they went with the franchise tag route. Now, what's interesting is it's the non-exclusive franchise tag, which means another team, if they wanted to make a contract offer, could pony up two first-round draft picks and offer up a contract. The Ravens would have a chance to match that deal if they wanted to. So that's the next question that has to be answered. Are teams willing to make that kind of offer? And so far, you know, there don't seem to be, just from rumors, innuendo, and so forth, you know, it doesn't seem to be an indication that there's going to be a rush to try and get Lamar Jackson.
Denard Walker, when you played, how much concern was there among players about collusion? And if Lamar Jackson does not get a contract offer from another team, how loud will the cries of collusion be, do you think?
Well, I don't know how loud it would be. I mean, you got to understand, first of all, what is that non-exclusive franchise tag? Look at it like this. It's kind of like a win-loss situation. If you're Steve Bisciotti, who's the owner of the Baltimore Ravens, just let say if you let Lamar go and you're not willing to match that offer, you do gain two first-round draft picks this year and next year, right?
Correct.
That's the way it works. So would that be a win for Baltimore? Even if you think that's a win, can you replace the production of Lamar Jackson? It's kind of like a win-loss situation. You know, this is a situation where if you're the general manager, and let's say if we're in Cleveland right now, did the Deshaun Watson deal work out? It's not looking very good. It's an organization look like they went backwards. Guys, of course, everybody wants to get compensated. But if you a GM and you make this movement, if it doesn't work, you out of a job. And not to mention, look what you lose in return.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, and it'll be interesting to see if this sets sort of a new precedent for how teams deal with some of these free agent issues going forward. But those are discussions for another day. This discussion is done. For John Glennon, for Denard Walker, I am David Beauclair. Thank you, as always, for listening to Believe in Titans, brought to you by Bet Online.